All right, good evening one more time. Thank you so much for your welcome of me and your attention. I really appreciate the time that we've gotten to spend together and got some last thoughts for you to take with you this evening. First, I would like to do this one more time. I'd like to do some review. There are a few who haven't had the advantage of all the rest of our time together. So just very, very quickly, I'm going to do one slide for each thing we've talked about. We talked about who needs evangelism. We talked about how obviously the lost sinner needs to be rescued from eternal condemnation. We talked about how God needs evangelism. Well, not needs it. God's perfect. But that God has appointed evangelism as his means to teach the world and to bring the lost to salvation. We talked about the church needing evangelism, that is how our numbers are going to grow. That's how we're going to become healthy and able to do things together as the body of Christ. And we talked about how you and I need evangelism because it's one of those things that we're going to be held accountable for. We used the example of the watchman on the ramparts from Ezekiel 33, how his responsibility was sending forth the cry of the impending judgment. And if he doesn't blow that trumpet and people are lost, they're going to be lost in their own sin, but we will share the responsibility. So how, you know, what a terrible thought for my loved ones, my friends, neighbors, family members, to be torn away from me and headed toward eternal condemnation, and to look in my direction and to say, you knew about this and you didn't say anything about this. It's really as simple as that when you think about our duty. And so we talked about what you and I can do individually. If you haven't made your list yet, I encourage you to do it. Piece of paper, write down five names of people that you would like to introduce to the gospel and begin praying for that list. Remember, the rich man in Luke chapter 16 had a list, but he waited until after he was dead to make his list. Don't make that mistake. Make your list now and start working on introducing those individuals to the gospel. Of course, behave yourself. Hypocrisy is a killer of the gospel. Go ahead and make that invitation. It's not as nerve-wracking as we make it out to be. Perhaps even go further and teach people from the scriptures themselves. We talked about our attitude for evangelism being like Jesus. As he was a friend of tax collectors and sinners, so too we need to be tolerant and patient toward those who do not understand our practices, do not understand our way of life, don't yet live like Christians. When we go out fishing for men, we don't land breaded fillets. We land fish, and they need an opportunity to mature in Christ. And so we need to be very patient during that process. And then last night we talked about the needs of all new Christians. And we reduced those into a list of four W's. Word, that is the word of God. Worship, how uplifting that is and draws us nearer to Christ as we sing and pray together. Work, everybody needs activity to feel a part of the group. And of course, warmth. Perhaps the single most important factor as they replace those old relationships with the new ties of the family in Christ. Again, if you missed any of those talks and you want the slides or the write-up, I am super happy. Just give me your email address and I will send those to you. Tonight, my intention is, since this is a Wednesday night and we're kind of used to this, to run this more like a class. I'm going to try to slow down a little bit. And if you have any comments or questions that you would like to make starting now, please feel free to throw your hand up and I will grab that question the best I can. I also intend to stop about 10 minutes early tonight and take any last questions that you may have been saving up all this time because you heard we were going to have a Q&A at the end. And I still intend to do that. So maybe there's one that you're thinking of now, you want to jot it down so you don't forget it. Or if there's not, that's okay too. Just whatever you would like to do. So this is kind of a class. So please feel free to speak up. I guess the main thing that I hope to leave with you when this is all said and done is that it is our responsibility as a church to reach out to the lost. So very often we lose that emphasis amongst all of the other things that we begin doing as Christians, that we fail to keep that main mission the main mission. And we fall into so many other different things. If I can just leave you with the same emphasis that Paul places and that Jesus places on reaching out to the lost, the rest of them are just details. The rest of them are just applications and some daily advice as to how we might do those things. But to have the emphasis where when we get together in a congregational meeting or an elders meeting, that not the only thing we talk about would be the color of the pews or the financial aspects, but how many people have we baptized this year? And what could we do to go further and to say baptize 2 people a month for the rest of the year, or 1 person a month, or 1 person every 2 months, to set some of those goals and to make that an emphasis and to evaluate ourselves on that basis. I think that's an important part of who we are as a church, and to pray for those things. Jesus says the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Therefore, beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest, that we would be faithful in that regard. Brethren, pray for us, Paul says, that the word of the Lord will spread rapidly and be glorified, just as it did also with you. It's amazing to me when you go back to the book of Acts and realize that Paul spent approximately 3 weeks in Thessalonica. 3 weeks, what he accomplished in that city. Now, I know he had some Jewish members of the synagogue to start with. He wasn't starting from scratch, but he left Thessalonica after 3 weeks with a faithful, solid congregation. A young congregation, you can tell based on the kinds of things he talks about in the First Thessalonian letter. But I am amazed what Paul accomplished in 3 weeks. And I look and see what I've accomplished in Lake Wales in 3 weeks, and I think, boy, oh boy, your emphasis is in the wrong place. Written a lot of bulletin articles. I've preached a lot of sermons, but I haven't baptized anybody in the last 3 weeks. So maybe all of our priorities need to adjust and to change. Let me start out by talking about our main subject for the evening are things that the whole congregation can do by way of evangelism. We've talked about us as individuals. But now as a church family, what are the things that we can do to focus on evangelizing the lost? There is a scriptural foundation for being mindful of people coming into our assemblies. And sometimes we kind of forget about that. You know, we look over our shoulders and, oh, hey, there's a face that I haven't seen before. And yeah, I hope they get something out of it. And maybe they'll come back. Maybe they won't. No big deal. But actually, scripture puts a lot more emphasis on that than maybe we do. In Colossians chapter 4 and verse 5, Paul says, conduct yourself with wisdom toward outsiders. There's that understanding that there are people in the community who are outside of Christ. And he says, conduct yourself with wisdom when it comes to outsiders. People who come walking in those back doors as visitors to a worship service are already interested. 90% of the work is already done. If you're in the corporate world, corporations pay good money for contacts. And that's an automatic contact walking in that door. We've got to take advantage of it and conduct ourselves with wisdom toward those outsiders, making the most of the opportunity that God has provided us. 1 Corinthians 9, verses 19 through 22, Paul talks about how he was mindful of his behavior in the sight of outsiders, that he had actually become all things to all men. Now, not without the law of Christ. He wouldn't do things that were sinful. But he wouldn't go over to a Jewish household and order up pork roast. He was very careful to behave himself in a way that allowed him to be able to emphasize the gospel and not to break that opportunity. 1 Corinthians 14 is an especially good one to me. In the context, I understand, of spiritual gifts, which is a little different context than we have, but still a worship service, a worship assembly. Paul says if it's done in the right way, then that visiting individual will fall on his face and worship God, declaring that God is certainly among you. And I would hope that our worship services would do that very same thing, that we would be so mindful of the visitors within our midst, what their experience in worship is, that they could look around at our praying and our singing and our teaching and could walk away, maybe not yet convinced that they want to serve Jesus, but convinced that God is working among us. That would be an amazing thing for a worship service to do, and clearly it's possible. And James 2, verses 1 through 9, talking about being careful of our treatment of people who are different than we are, that if a man comes into our assembly not dressed exactly the same way or not with highfalutin clothing, that we don't demean him or say, oh, you know, you sit over there in the peanut gallery. Oh, but here comes the rich man. Oh, you sit right here in this good spot right here. That we don't make those sorts of distinctions among those who enter our assembly. We ought to be mindful of visiting unbelievers and make the most of those opportunities that God himself provides. Think about, as we begin to think about some of these congregational efforts, you have Publix in town? I haven't seen one yet, so there is a Publix. All right, in Lake Wales, we have two Publix and we have a super Walmart. And I noticed you don't have a super Walmart yet, but or at least not one that I saw. If you blindfolded me and put earplugs in my ears and then led me by the hand into a grocery store in Lake Wales, right into the middle of the store, and then you took the earplugs out and you took the blindfold off, I could tell you in 2 seconds what grocery store I was standing in. It had nothing to do with the products on the shelves, but I could tell you by the way the clerks were interacting with customers. I could tell you by the cleanliness of the floors. I see nodding of heads. I could tell you by the speech of the customers in the store, whether I was in a Walmart or a Publix or perhaps even a Winn-Dixie. You know, we have a sense of sort of the culture of a grocery store. And we would be kidding ourselves to think that there isn't those same sorts of decisions and thought patterns involved with those who enter into one of our assemblies. Now, let me not be misunderstood, okay? I am not suggesting that we can convert people on the basis of the appearance of our buildings, or that we even want to try to convert people on such shallow, materialistic things. But what we have to be careful about is that we do not close down a person's opportunity to learn the gospel before they have a chance. Most of us in this room are already mature Christians. And so Jackson or Will, you've probably visited congregations around as their FC students. If they walk into a particular place, they're going to endure a lot of things, right? They're not going to say, oh, AC isn't on. I'm not going to stick around here. No, they've found their place among God's people in this town. They're going to stick it out through that service and probably put all of their effort into that worship service, try to gain something from that service. A brand new visitor probably will not do that. Or they'll walk into a worship service in some run-down building where the lawn is 6 inches high and they can't figure out which door to go in and there's a lot of miscues and it's confusing and maybe nobody's there 5 minutes before worship starts and are we in the right place? I don't know. Are you sure? And the sign's all rickety so they can't figure it out. And okay, here people come. And they're going to let that pass. They're going to ignore those things because they're mature Christians and they don't care about superficial things. Your average first-time visitor is not like that and is not going to tolerate those sorts of things. They will miss out on the beautiful message of the gospel because other things have gotten in the way. And so that's really all that I'm suggesting on the things that follow. Simple things which are not going to replace the gospel message. That must be done. But simple things that any congregation can do to just be careful not to drive away somebody before they have the chance to learn. Let me ask you a question. When do you think, statistically, a brand new visitor begins making decisions about whether or not he'll ever come back to a congregation? Take a guess. Yeah. Yeah, you're all going the right. I was kind of hoping somebody would say, "Well, when Abraham starts preaching," I wish that were true. But no, that's probably 60 minutes or 30 minutes into a service. Well, before they sit down. No, that's too late too. People begin making decisions about whether or not to return within 10 minutes of driving into the parking lot. And grace is correct in that people are already making those decisions based on the website. You know, almost nobody these days, last statistic I saw was 95% of first-time visitors to a congregation have already viewed the website. And so signage is important on a road so that people know, okay, I've gotten to the right place. But what's really important is the website, because almost everybody is going to check out that website first these days. It's a rare exception that somebody has not visited the church's website. So that's a really important thing. Those are the kinds of things that we need to think about. And so I would encourage you in the days and weeks to come after our meeting that you just kind of do a walkthrough and a drive-in of this congregation and this building, thinking of everything that you see, reevaluating every object and every effort and every part of the worship service and everything that we do together from the standpoint of a first-time visitor. And it's okay to reevaluate those things because we just kind of don't appreciate them anymore, but specifically to think about things from that viewpoint. I would have to say that in being here the last several days, you all have done a wonderful job of presenting a clean, well-kept building. It was very easy for me to find. I would say I love your website, but you use the same web service that we do, and both of them were down this week, so Congregate is having some issues on their side of things. But it was easy to find your address and your service times. I had no issue with that at all. No issue finding it through Google Maps. Took me right here. All of those things were taken care of. I love the beautiful artwork that you have on the walls. I love the welcoming feel of the foyer there as I come in. The bathrooms were clean. The building is a little hot for my taste, but I'm always a hot-natured person. I think that you've done a fantastic job in thinking of a lot of those things already. But maybe there's some other things that I've not yet seen. And so just kind of do a drive-through and a walk-through from the standpoint, thinking of things through the eyes of a first-time visitor. This is one thing, to my shame, that Lake Wales has not done a good job of recently. We used to do a much better job of this, of having ushers at the back ready to welcome every first-time visitor who comes in the doors. I flew earlier this year on American Airlines, and my decision whether or not to ever fly American Airlines again was based, guess who I'm making this decision, which employee? Was it the president of the company? Never met the guy, I have no idea who it is, him or her. Do you suppose I made that decision on the basis of the pilot? The mechanic? Guess who it was? The ticket agent. Oh, the stewardess, that was a good one, I didn't think about that. No, I had pretty good stewardesses when I finally got on the flight. It was the ticket agent that drove me crazy. And the ticket agent is a low-level person in an airline, not a very skilled position, but the position that's in front of the public all the time. And so we make our decisions as to whether or not a hospital is good based on a billing clerk or a nurse, not usually a doctor. We make decisions about a grocery store chain, not on the CEO, but on the basis of the person who checked me out at the register. And so it is that the first face a person is going to see when they walk into a building is going to be your usher, the person or persons, or a couple perhaps, that you have selected to be the face of the congregation, who knows all the names of the regular people, so that a new face is, how are you? And welcomes those individuals, directs their children to the classes, if they have children, directs them to a seat, makes them feel welcome, and does the super, super important job of handing them a visitor card or a visitor packet. We spent about 3 years revamping what we do in this respect. We've had visitor packets that were like 6 pages long. And honestly, that didn't do us a lot of good. We've changed it up a bunch of different ways, and finally we're down to just one little postcard. And that seems to work the best. Those postcards to us at Lake Wales are like gold. Again, companies pay for those kind of contacts, and people are willing to give us their contact information when we promise we're not going to sell it, we're not going to harass you or harangue you, but we would love to send you a thank you note and recognize your visit today. And I don't think I've ever had anybody say, oh no, I'm not giving you my address. They usually give us their mailing address and their email. And what we do with those visitor packets is before we leave on Sunday afternoon, myself and one of the ladies of the congregation make photocopies of those visitor cards. And a group meets that hopefully more people in the group will send out notes. Sometimes that's better or worse depending on the group. But at least the two of us do that, myself and this other woman, so that that week, those visitors get a card, at least two cards from the congregation. The same thing every time, so I don't have to make up what I'm saying. It's just a brief welcome, an acknowledgement of their visit, and it's a little touch that they get later in the week to invite them to come back once again. Those cards are gold, and they drive our evangelism at Lake Wales, at least in terms of those visiting our services. And so make worship visitor conscious. Again, everybody does this different ways, and you may have more or less effective ways to go about it. I would suggest eliminating announcements and starting your worship service with a song, encouraging your members to do kind of more reading of announcements in the family report and less announcing. But again, everybody does things differently, just to think about it in terms of what a visitor is thinking and feeling in the process of worship. Preach applicable lessons. And above all things, be sure that every sermon is something that can be not only understood by a visitor, but will not necessarily be offensive. Now, again, let me be sure that I don't misstate that. I think that the gospel is meant to drill down to the heart of the matter and to convict people's hearts. I'm not talking about disguising or watering down the truth. I just mean being very careful about what we say in a respectful way. So my parents are not Christians. And I told you I was converted when I was 17. And it took me a solid 3 years to get my dad to enter a church building. And this actually happened in Ithaca, New York. So he was kind of stuck. I had the transportation, so he had to go where I was going anyway. And so I got Dad to come. He attended services. And that Sunday morning, our regular preacher happened to be out of town. I didn't know that was going to be the case, but that's just what happened. And the guy who got up to speak was actually a corrections officer at a local jail, which is good. I've met a lot of wonderful spiritual officers. It's a good thing. Unfortunately, he got up and he started his lesson with an illustration about short Italian businessmen. My dad is a short Italian, sort of fancies himself a businessman, not necessarily, but anyway, hit enough of the checks there, checked off enough of the boxes that my dad in January in Ithaca, New York, stood up in the middle of the assembly, marched himself all the way down the long aisle, back out the doors, and sat on the sidewalk in the snow until the end of the service. It wrecked me. I couldn't believe it. After all that work, 3 years, and finally he comes, and that's what happens. I have a similar tale to that. My wife's best friend, she worked for years inviting her to services. And finally, on a vacation, got her to come and attend with the rest of the family a service. And the preacher got up and spoke about her particular denomination in the most, you can do that in a respectful way. I teach on false doctrine all the time. I teach on denominational issues from time to time, but always hoping and expecting that there will be someone in that audience from that denominational background so that we can have a respectful and open and honest discussion about it. That's a good thing to do. That's not what this guy did. His opening illustration was on the devil's hamburger. I don't even remember where it went after that. It didn't make any difference. Yes, indeed, the devil's hamburger. And it was that particular denominational set of teach. She shut off. It was the most disrespectful, off-putting thing, and it ruined all those efforts ever since. Truth must be spoken, but spoken in a way that's not going to drive people away before they can hear it. So be mindful. Be hoping and praying that you'll have visitors, and conduct a service and preach lessons in such a way that makes the most of those opportunities. Observe the 3-minute rule. Would anybody like to take a guess at what the 3-minute rule would be? Jackson knows what it is, so he's not allowed to respond. But yes, that is exactly what it is. If right after the closing prayer, what most of us do, myself included, is make a beeline for my favorite person in the congregation, because I want to catch up and I want to bask in the glorious presence of my brothers and sisters. For 3 minutes after the closing prayer, forget about your friends. Find that visitor and go straight over to that visitor and introduce yourself, because that makes them feel so welcome and so loved, and opens them up to the prospect of returning and of listening further to the gospel message. If even 10 of us would do that, just for 3 minutes after services, no hellos to your friends, just to visitors. Shake their hands first, then stick around and talk to each other. It makes a huge difference. My college roommate, when he came and visited us in Lake Wales, this was many years ago, I said, psst, pretend that you don't know me. Just show up and then report back to me what you think our congregation is like afterwards. It was really eye-opening. It was sad and it was frustrating, actually. He kept track of who welcomed him and how many people welcomed him and for how long. We had to work on that. That was really something that we had to change. And it was nice to have, what do they call those guys, the secret shoppers or something like that, who sort of did that behind the scenes, you know, and reported back. Just makes all the difference in the world. Again, that's not going to convert anybody. The gospel has to do that. But it's certainly going to make it easier to convert somebody later. So observe the 3-minute rule. Follow up immediately. We've already talked about that. My own rule is that if a person comes back 2 or 3 times, that's the opportunity to begin asking if they'd like to meet and have a study. But that first time, just send those thank you notes. Just send those thank you notes and invite them back. And again, have a great website. All right, any comments or questions so far? I'm getting close to the time that I was planning to stop and take your Q&As, so if you've got them already, I'll take some of them. All right, we'll keep going. Whoops. Here are some other things that the congregation as a whole can do, and I think some very important things. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 2, you can always remember it by the 3 2s, says, "The things which you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." It is such a wonderful thing to be an encouragement to a young preacher or to a preacher's family, or even to take on a part-time preacher from FC or something along those lines, or to develop your own young men and to always set before them throughout their growing up years, through the middle school and the high school class, you could make a great preacher one day. We used to take our best and our brightest and say, we hope that you're going to preach the gospel one day, not you're going to become a doctor or a lawyer or whatever. We hope that you're going to preach, and to hold that up as a worthy goal. We should continue to do that and develop from within our own congregations and make those efforts to develop new preachers. We desperately need new preachers. Abe?
Yeah, I think...
I'm going to go backwards?
Well, it was way back there, so I just want to comment a little bit more on that. So Paul is saying he became all things to all men. And when you see that as a way for a congregation even to make their building or their setup in such a way that it is most conducive to a visitor coming in. That would be an effective way of thinking through that verse.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's I'll just go back to it real fast because I think I can get back to it. I mean, that's, again, Paul is very clear. He was not breaking the law of God. He still submitted to the law of Christ. Nothing that we do is outside of truth. But within those boundaries, he was sensitive to the needs of people who were not yet mature in Christ. And so I use the, you know, pork roast at a Jewish person's household. But, you know, I imagine there's some other things that we would have to be careful about, you know, just not to needlessly offend those who are first visiting with us and learning the gospel. If that's really important to us, then we'll make those kinds of sacrifices. Being evangelistically minded does require certain sacrifices. It means getting out of our own comfort zones of what pleases us in worship and thinking about worship and teaching and all of our lives and efforts with respect to how effective we're being as evangelists. It's just tweaking our thinking ever so slightly in the direction of evangelism and remembering how important that really is. And I tell you, when it starts happening and you begin to see people responding and becoming followers of Christ, remember what Jesus said, "I have food to eat that you don't even know about." It is such an uplifting feeling to be a part of that process. You get hungry for it, and you want to do it more and more and more and more. So that was a great question. Tim?
Yeah, you were really drilling in on making sure that you're mindful of the visitors and
yes.
Be prepared for that. You don't know just how long that stays in people's minds, assuming you're successful with it. You know, without going long, Paige and I were traveling out of Atlanta one time coming home, and we were on the road, and we stopped at a congregation for worship on Sunday morning. Irrelevant that it was primarily a black group.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of them, I've never been so overwhelmed with people wanting to know who we were and what we were. And just it was an amazing experience of how many people called for visitors.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually hard to leave. And we were needing to get back on the road. But you say, how long ago was it? That was years ago.
Yeah, you still remember it.
I still see it very, very vividly in the feeling, and we talked almost all the way home about that experience.
Yes.
Of how genuine, not just something they practiced,
yeah.
But something they lived in a very, very genuine feeling when we left. And it's just a great experience. If they handle all new visitors, and they didn't know who we were. I mean, they assumed we were a visitor, we were traveling. They handled everybody like that. I can just tell you, it was an amazing experience.
Yeah. Warms the soil to prepare for the planting of the seed, really. And without it, when people walk away feeling like, oh, that was just such a cold experience. I mean, very few of us, even as mature Christians, I don't know how long I would last as a lonely Christian. Teaching is important. Truth is the essential nugget of the gospel. But without those family contacts, that's where the strength comes from to get through the temptations in life. And if we don't have that and if we don't build that, it makes the other parts of it much more difficult.
So I'm curious.
Yes.
At your congregation, do you have certain people that are the greeters that do that, certain people that do not? Because there are people that are better at it than other people.
Absolutely. We have slipped in this regard a little bit, but we have a line on our duty list that we make up each month where we've got all of the, lead, close, or opening prayer, closing prayer, all that stuff. And then at the bottom of it is a list of the monthly duties, and usher and greeter are both monthly duties. And so we have a person who's in charge of that for the month, and we have a section on our website which you can do this on Congregate. I don't know if you guys do this or not, but we encourage each of the families of the congregation to go and set their own preferences. And, you know, you can just go into Congregate and say, okay, I will lead an opening prayer, I will do an invitation talk, and I'll lead the Lord's Supper talk. And then Congregate automatically populates that list for you. And so you can select, I want to be an usher or I want to be a greeter. And then that role is assigned. Yes.
So it kind of felt like awkward.
Yes.
When you're coming new from the street and you don't know who's who in the church.
Yeah.
It makes it a little harder.
Yeah, well, and imagine, thank you for your perspective. Imagine for the rest of us, like going to a new school, how awkward that feels to not know where things are or what you're expected to do. Imagine if one of us were to go visit a mosque or something like that. Are they going to make me stand up or sit down, or what are they going to ask me to do? It's a very weird situation. And I would hope that, you know, we're a little bit more comfortable than that, but it is a nerve-wracking situation to walk into a place for the first time. And so as much as we can do to make that a comfortable situation, we just warm that ground for the gospel. So, Tim.
You recommend or what are your thoughts on, as we're inviting people to assemble with us, and our friends maybe we study with just a little bit, you kind of make them feel comfortable and prep them for what they will be experiencing when they're here with us. And just what you said, you know, you won't be made uncomfortable and blank or blank, or you just let that naturally, you know, take it far from the get-go.
If it's somebody that I know, I do try to prepare them for that a little bit. Well, Jackson knows what I'm going to say. So don't tell anybody, but we have a certain thing that I don't like. We have a particular song night that we do. The way we set it up is not very visitor friendly at all. I love to sing, don't get me wrong, and I love worship. The way we have it set up currently is not all that visitor friendly. So I do tend to steer my friends away from our Wednesday night song service and say, come back for class, you know. Yes, I do try to prepare people for what they'll experience. But also, I think one of the things that we do well, and Jackson can yay or nay this, is do a pretty good job of explaining the different aspects of our service as we're doing them. So I think you guys did a great job as well for the Lord's Supper talk. You know, people understood what's about to happen and what was expected. And I don't think anybody would have been off put by any of those things. You had your hand up. You didn't. Okay. David, did you have your hand up?
A couple of comments. Many years ago, I can't remember how many years ago it was, Colin Williamson came and spoke to us.
Oh, yes.
A couple of things he said in there that I thought might just reiterate. Most of us weren't here for that. One of them he said, rather than inviting people to come with you, he says, instead recommend.
Yes.
If you say, will you come with me, and say no, what do you do next? It's kind of done, right? But he said, if you recommend, you say, oh, we really had the best sermon last Sunday. The preacher talked about this and everything. I'd love for you to come hear him sometime. Oh, we had some song. I loved that song. And, you know, we had a, just, and say, sometime I'd love for you to come and visit with me because I just love it so much kind of thing. And now what you're doing is recommending, and you can do that all the time. Because it doesn't require any response from them to say yes or no or make a decision and cut off the conversation and say, will you come with me sometime? No. Now, what are you going to do next? You know, so you're
that's kinda, good. That's good.
And there's no pressure on them. Right? And then you don't get any rejection or feel like you've been rejected if they say no or don't come. You just keep bragging about where you are, what you do, and then recommending it to people to come and take a look and come see it. So that was one point. The other one was... it's not so much true today as it was when I was growing up, but, you know, most people used to think you had to really dress up to come to worship. But we're very casual here, so, you know, that's not an issue here. We may be too casual, I don't know. But one of the things he said was, when people come in to visit, they're looking around the room to see if there's somebody like them there.
Yes.
So if everybody's dressed up, this guy with blue jeans and a t-shirt may say, I just don't have good enough clothes, I can't come, I don't fit in, they're embarrassed because they're underdressed. But on the other hand, if somebody comes in, everybody's dressed in blue beans and a t-shirt, and they come in dressed up in a suit, they look around and think, oh, I don't really fit here. So his idea was that you should have some of both, some that dress up a little more formally and some that are more casual. And then when somebody walks in, they say, well, I kind of like those guys over there. I fit in with them. So somebody here like me, because when you're a visitor, you want to at least feel like you fit in some way. So those are two things that came to my mind that he had recommended years ago and stuck with me that thought might be helpful.
That's wonderful. That's very good. Another thing, and this we've all kind of circled around this a little bit, the last thing on this slide is to host an annual Visitor's Day. It is astounding the kind of, now I don't know if this works this way everywhere. I know that Ocala has done it very effectively. We've actually had one of our recent visitor days where we had 60 first-time visitors in attendance. And that a lot of that was from one family that did a lot of that inviting, where what you do is you select a particular Sunday. You make sure that it's not like Super Bowl Sunday or Mother's Day or something, unless that's what you're targeting, you know, a Super Bowl theme, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, you don't give people an excuse to not be there. We actually made that mistake like 10 years ago when we did a visitor's day, and we didn't look at the calendar, and it was opening day of baseball. Not Major League Baseball, but the town baseball, which is like Little League is a big deal in Lake Wales. Nobody came because they were all taking their kids down to opening day. So, you know, watch out for stuff like that, but pick a day well in advance. Print up material, encourage people to be praying about it. Again, make a list of 5 or 10 people that they're going to hand invitations to. And then you assure the congregation, everything we do is going to be putting our best foot forward. We're going to have our best song leader. We're going to have somebody who's going to lead good prayers. They're all good prayers, but, you know, especially good, thoughtful prayers. The sermon is going to be especially designed to introduce visitors to the gospel. Don't worry, the preacher's not going to speak on money or short Italian businessmen that day. Just to set everybody at ease and to know this is a safe and good opportunity to get everybody to bring their visitors in. And it's amazing the kind of response that you can sometimes have from something like that. Yeah.
Kind of piggybacking off of that, let's say you get your friends there or you get visitors there.
Yes.
Should you feel obligated to kind of dump them off on the preacher, or should you, having been the person who invited these people and met these people, feel obligated yourself to take the next step in sharing the gospel?
Oh, you mean like after this?
Yeah.
Oh, so you make them sit with you for sure. But after, either way, one of the things we talked about a couple weeks ago was preparing to teach somebody the gospel. But usually what that's going to be is after, all right, how was the worship service? Would you like, I bet you had some questions. Yeah, I do have some questions. Will you sit down with our preacher and talk about that? And that's usually the direction that goes. It's one of the most exciting things in the world when the preacher is not the one doing the baptizing. I love those baptisms when it's a member of the congregation who does the baptizing, because they're the ones that taught the person the gospel. That's amazing. And so I encourage that whenever possible. But most of the time it's going to be, would you sit down with my preacher? And he'd love to talk to you about that. And that works out well. Man, great questions. Anybody else? Okay, so I just have one more thing, and that is to support outside evangelism. It's definitely one of the most uplifting things that our congregation has done is you may know Ken Parrish, and he goes down into Nicaragua. He's kind of our eyes and ears down there, but we don't have the resources to send people to Nicaragua. But we do have enough money to be able to support native preachers. And so we support 5 Nicaraguan preachers, and we get their reports. Ken will come and show us some slides every year or so and bring us up to date on some of that work. It is such a shot in the arm for our congregation to know that we might not have a zillion baptisms in Lake Wales, but they're having a zillion baptisms down in Nicaragua, and we have fellowship with that work. It really makes us feel so good. And so I would encourage you to be involved in that wherever financially possible, either as a congregation or as individuals. Go and make disciples of all the nations, not just Dade City. Philippians 1:5, and if you can't support financially, then to be praying for those works. Offering prayer with joy in my every prayer for you all in view of your participation in the gospel from the first day until now. It's a wonderful thing to be a part of that work. Okay? Any other comments or questions? I've come to the end of my material. Yes?
I just wanted to make a comment about the annual visitors thing.
Yes.
I grew up going to University Church of Christ.
Yes.
I don't know if you know where that is, mm-hmm. around here, but it's actually south of here. But anyway.
I know Taylor anyway. So.
They actually, I don't know if they still do it or not, because it's been quite a while since I went there, but they just had it automatically the first Sunday night of every month. They would have what they called like a bring a friend to church night type of thing. But when you were talking about the annual visitors thing, it made me think about when I went there when I was younger, and they started doing that when I was going there growing up.
That's very cool. If you can maintain that kind of schedule, that would be a wonderful thing to do.
But yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting because I had never seen it anywhere else. But for the longest time, I remember them doing every first Sunday night of the month. They had it very specific, and it would be bring your friend to church for Sunday night service every first Sunday of the month.
But yeah.
Anyway, just made me think of that. I just thought that was interesting.
Very neat. Very neat. Anyone else? Yes. You did.
Yes.
Thank you to whoever did that. You're wonderful. And did it make you feel good?
Yes, it made me feel really good, like somebody cared.
It's very good. It makes such a just something as easy and simple as that is just a little note that said, "I noticed that you were here, and I hope you come back." It really touches people's hearts, and again, just warms the soil for the planting of the seed is all. So I hope you'll keep coming back. That's great. All right, anybody else? All right, thank you all so much. Do you want me to do an invitation? Okay. I'll just sit down and hush. Listen, thank you so much. I really appreciate this half a week we've gotten to spend together. Your hospitality is wonderful. The time that I've gotten to know you is wonderful. I even got a wooden chain out of this whole thing, and I'm excited about that. So it was great for me. And appreciate so much. You've refreshed my spirit and encouraged me, and I thank you so much for that. So.